Hey everybody, and welcome back to Indie Film Cafe. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody, and I'm here with
Paul Apersenza, known as the Moo Cow. Moo!
Alright, and since it's Paul's pick today, I'm going to let him take over.
Alrighty, so this week we are going to go way back in time to 1996.
Wow, that's a long time ago.
A long time ago. And we are going to see a film that it's kind of interesting. Every time I see this movie, I have a new reaction to it. And everybody I show it to kind of has a different reaction. Some people love it. Some people hate it. You're not going to have too many neutral sort of reactions to it. So I'm very curious to see what your reaction to it is if you haven't already seen it.
Okay, what is it?
The movie this week is Killer Tongue.
No, I've never even heard of it.
You're in for a treat, my friend.
I've heard of Killer Condom, but not Killer Tongue.
Nope. This is Killer Tongue. I've got Killer Condom, but that's for another show.
That's another episode.
Right.
All right. Well, there you go. I guess that will... So everybody, we're going to be watching Killer Tongue, and then we'll come back, and we'll tell you guys...
how we checked it out, how we liked it.
How we felt.
There you go. Slip you a little Killer Tongue there, people.
All right.
But first...
A little
mood music.
And we're back.
Woohoo.
All right. From watching Killer Tongue.
Killer Tongue.
Ugh. Huh.
Wow. What did you think of that?
We'll go into that soon. Let's start talking about it a little bit, and I'll tell you what I really thought about it.
So, Killer Tongue, as I said, is a movie from 1996. It is directed by Alberto Sciamma, and I have a couple other movies that he did. He did a movie called Black Plague, which is made with, the actress who plays Cersei in Game of Thrones, Lena Headey.
Yeah, Lena Headey.
And then another one called Blood Trap. They're, you know, okay movies. There's nothing like this.
I have Blood Trap.
Yeah, there's nothing. I mean, this movie is pretty much a singular film. There's not going to be much out there like this. And it stars Melinda Clark, who plays Candy. She is the person who the Killer Tongue sort of becomes attached to.
Literally.
She is in a whole bunch of TV series. She was in Gotham. She was in Vampire Diaries. She was in...
Entourage,
that's Nikita, CSI, from. The OC, Firefly. She was also in a number of movies, Spawn.
Return of the Living Dead 3.
Mulholland Falls. Yeah, so she's been around. She's been in a bunch of stuff. Folks who watch a lot of films, you'll recognize her. And she was really, really good in this. The opposite is Jason Durr, who plays Johnny. Now, he is kind of he's a stage actor. And believe it or not, he's a guy that was actually in the Royal Shakespeare Company.
Cool.
And he is actually, aside from that, he's done a lot of TV stuff, especially in England. So I didn't really see too much by way of movies from him, but it's just interesting to me that somebody from the Royal Shakespeare Company was in this movie. That's not what you would expect.
Yeah, it wasn't a call for Shakespeare for this movie.
Not at all. I don't think Shakespeare would ever, that would be like a fever dream for him. And then let's see, who else we got? We've got Robert Englund in there.
Well, to go back to the Shakespeare thing real quick, I just wanted to mention, like, this did have a little bit of, like, a Romeo and Juliet vibe.
Oh, yeah, it did.
I could see that.
Absolutely.
You know.
But Robert Englund, playing the prison director, of course, Nightmare on Elm Street, amongst many, many things. And this is such a different role for him. It's just amazing. It really is.
Yeah.
Anybody who's a fan of Robert Englund really needs to see this film in order to see his performance, because I don't think you're ever going to see him like this in any other movie.
Unless they do like something similar to it or whatever, like with his character being, I don't know, just a weird, you know, prison guard.
Weird, violent, nasty, but interesting character.
I know. And he's violent and nasty, but then at times he's also not so, you know, like
right.
He's just goofy at times. I don't know.
It's just so strange.
Great. Fuck you, sir. Reed, you just can't stand the fact that I'm gonna be a free man and you're gonna live in this shithole for the rest of your life. Now, again. Fuck me, sir. Yes, fuck you. It says fuck you. That's what it says today. That's what it'll say tomorrow. Let me tell you something. Listen to me. I'm gonna make you blow it big time. You know why? Because you belong here with Papa.
In addition to him, there is Doug Bradley, who plays Wig, who is, of course, famous for all the Hellraiser films. And there's a number of people that you're going to see in there. Let's see there. There's Jonathan Rhys-Meyers, who plays Rudolph, who's one of the poodles. And we haven't gotten into that yet, but we will. He's, of course, famous for the Tudors. Steve S. Mars plays Ralph. He was in Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. Mopi Galon plays Rita, the hot nun that ends up helping people and sort of becomes the third person in the triangle. She was in a bunch of stuff. She's a Spanish actress who's been in a lot of foreign films. She was also in City of Lost Children. And there's just all kinds of interesting people that pop up in there. So I guess we could talk about the plot.
Okay.
Okay. So the movie, it kind of starts off like a heist movie. There's Candy and there's Johnny, and they have just stolen money from a bank, in theory, because you never see it, with the other two guys. What were they? It was Chip and Frank.
Oh, my goodness. And I love those two guys.
And they're in their getaway car, and they're, like, celebrating that they've just ripped off this bank.
Oh, and then they're like, oh, I love you, man. And like, right. No, I love you, man. And they're, like, all, like, into each other, and then all of a sudden they get kicked out.
Yeah, Candy and her man turn around and point guns at them, and God, they super glue their lips together and leave them tied on the road.
They leave them tongue-tied. And what is great about that is it's like foreshadowing the tongue stuff, you know, kind of with the theme of the tongue. Right. So I like that, because like when I saw it, I was like, oh, okay, because there's going to be a tongue. There's going to be, you know, so they're doing something right now with it.
And it's not going to be a happy tongue either, because they have to cut them way out, which is horrific and disgusting.
Yeah, that's pretty gross.
So they think they get away, but they get caught, and Johnny goes to jail, and Candy gets away, but she's got to hide out. So she decides she's going to hide out in this convent, I guess, which is really sort of a convent gas station. Because that's what they do. They sell gas.
I never understood that. I thought that was two different places or something.
Nope, it's the same place.
But at first I thought it was two separate places, because I just thought like they went and got the gas and then they would go somewhere else for the convent. But nope, they went right into the convent from the gas station. That was strange.
It's an interesting, you know, sort of comment about, you know, churches and convenience stores being kind of the same thing. You know, it's just interesting.
Is that what they were trying to say?
Possibly.
I don't know. It was hard to understand. I think they just didn't have a lot of money, so they had one location. They could use both. I don't know. There you go.
That's probably it. by the way, this movie is supposed to be set in New Mexico, but it was shot in Spain. And
really?
Yeah. It was shot in Spain. It actually had a $4 million budget, supposedly.
Wow.
Yeah. And
wait, 4 million American or 4 million in Spain? 4
American, 4 million American, from what I understand. This movie actually won the Best Director Award at the Fana Festival in England in 1996.
Neat.
Which is pretty cool. In Italy, sorry, not in England. So anyway, they're separated, and Johnny's having a rough time. He is in this awful jail, which is in the middle of nowhere, with this bunch of awful people, and Robert Englund is the prison warden, and he just takes delight in tormenting them and torturing them all the time.
Well, you never see them get busted, though. That was the thing. I was kind of upset about. It just kind of jumped to them being already busted, and her being a nun, because I guess she escaped before, you know, while he got busted, she escaped and decided to become a nun.
I guess they figured that was a little too boring, and they wanted to do all the other shenanigans. So,
honestly, I thought this was a movie that we should have saved for Jen. This actually would have been I think this would have been a Jen safe movie.
That would have been interesting.
I think she would have had a lot of fun things to say.
Possibly.
You know, but But, you know, maybe another time.
It's such a wackadoodle movie. It's possible.
Because we are doing the thing where we're trying to get other people so we get a third score. Right, you know, right. She would be a perfect person.
We'll see if she's got the time. I'll be happy to show it to her. So poor Johnny's, you know, trying to figure his way out. And meanwhile, Candy has set up shop in this, I don't know, it was like used to be a pork restaurant or something, because there's pigs all over the place. There's like a pig theme there. And she's there with her dogs, and all of a sudden, there is this meteor that falls from out of the sky and lands in the desert, blows up. There's a big chunk of it sitting there glowing, and a piece flies off and actually goes flying around for a while and lands in her soup. And as you do, you just go ahead and slurp that shit right up.
Well, she didn't know. She totally did not see it go in there.
Slurped it right up anyway, and bada bing, all of a sudden, she has a little guest. That's part of her life now. And I guess the dogs eat part of it too, and they turn into humans. I guess cross-dressing humans, which is interesting.
That's an interesting thing, because like I didn't understand, you know, why the tongue was, you know, like a part of her from it or whatever, because it was an alien, you know, right? And then the dogs became human. Like, does it affect, is it supposed to like affect animals differently than it affects humans? And
I wasn't putting a lot of thought behind that, but yeah, it's weird.
This movie made me think a little bit, made me wonder a little bit.
I don't know. You could say it's a little inconsistent. There may be a reason it's buried in there someplace, but it's really hard to tell. I thought it was hard to tell. But anyway, these poofy poodles become poofy humans. They're sort of like part of her pack, and she's very upset. She tries for quite a while to get rid of the tongue, very unsuccessfully. And every time she tries, it either smacks her around, or it picks her up and throws her around, or it makes itself quite, you know, clear that it does not want to leave her body.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, not to do any spoilers here, but eventually the two get very close indeed.
Mm-hmm.
And the tongue actually begins to talk. And it's funny because it sort of presents itself as an alternative to Johnny. Like, I remember at one point it says, "What has he got that I don't have?"
Live. Live. Yes. Yes. That's it. Come back to me. God damn, I'm sexy.
My body.
Well, excuse me. Get out of my body. What do you want me to do, grow legs and rent an apartment?
You can hear.
I can hear. Praise the Lord, I can hear. That's right, I can hear. Every little sordid detail as clear as your heartbeat. With Johnny this and Johnny that all day long.
It kind of has a very like Little Shop of Horrors,
right?
Like the musical vibe, you know, where the plant is talking. That's what it feels like with this, is that the tongue is talking, and is because there's even one part where it says "eat me" or something, like writes it on there. It says "eat me," and I thought that was pretty. Like, it was almost like saying, feed me, you know, right? So that's what I got from it. So I was like, oh, this is like a nice little homage to Little Shop of Horrors in a way.
Right. It was very cool. So, then all kinds of other shenanigans happen. There's just way too much kind of going on in there. And there's lots of stuff going on in the prison. And they finally get out of it. And there's a nun named Rita who doesn't talk for a long time. She eventually escapes. She's been kind of seeing the falling star for quite some time. I guess she has visions of it. And nobody pays attention to her. They think she's crazy. She won't talk. And she runs away, runs out into the desert, and ends up finding Johnny when Johnny tries to escape. And he has a very bad day. Johnny has a very bad day.
Like, he's escaped, and then he gets, like, handcuffed, and then he escapes from that, then he gets handcuffed again, you know? Like,
right, the guy who takes him gets blown up, and the pickaxe ends up in his chest.
Oh, my goodness.
And the female Rita, the nun, ends up saving him by using the power of the meteor to cure his wounds, which is another thing that I'm not quite sure exactly how that happens, but, you know, outer space, that alien
you can,
rock. Yeah,
you can say whatever. I mean,
sparkly alien rock power. There you go.
Oh.
And then it becomes a big chase scene, and they all come back, and they have to figure out who's going to be with who. And there is kind of sort of a happy ending at the end, mildly.
Yes. I mean,
not for the tongue, maybe, but.
Yeah. I mean, not even, like, I guess everybody gets kind of, in a way, what they want. But in the same sense, like, it's kind of depressing for Candy, because
yeah,
I think
is.
She started growing attached to the tongue.
Well, she was very attached to the tongue.
She was literally attached to the tongue, but I'm just saying that she was, you know, I think she actually felt a little something for the tongue by the end of it, which,
right.
I mean, even us as audience members, I feel like we sort of kind of grow
we do.
For the tongue, you know, like, at first the tongue's an asshole, and then he becomes a little bit, you know, more of a... You know, you kind of feel sorry for him. All he wants is love and a baby.
The tongue has quite a personality. And
whatever happened to the baby?
Well, that's just it. That was one of my questions that I was going to raise was towards the end, Johnny figures out the way to try to defeat the tongue is to take one of the glowing rocks that Rita brought and throw it into water. And he'd shot up the water tank so that the church was now filled with water. And they all stood up on the tables and they waited for Candy and the poodles to kind of come in and to so he could throw the rock in there. And I guess the tongue sees it coming and jumps on top of Jesus and everybody else gets blown up. You know, they have the big fight at the end, and then Rita actually does what Johnny can't do and pickaxes the tongue and it dies. And then Rita changes back, because I guess we forgot to mention, when the tongue takes over Rita, she changes from this nice, normal blonde woman into this weird, black-haired, vixen-y kind of alien chick with this really super tight, skin-tight suit with, like, weird raised backbones and stuff. But she goes back to normal at the end. In fact, I think she's naked. And you have to wonder if the baby went with her, or does she have the baby looking forward to? I mean, they don't really kind of show it at the end. The she acts as the narrator to be open the film, and then she closes the film.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar, as you pointed out, to The Devil's Backbone.
Uh-huh. We did that as a review for Criterion.
Right, 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 right. And I'm dying to know if Guillermo del Toro watched this film. I mean, it is a Spanish film.
It's a Spanish film, yeah.
But, yeah, so you have to wonder at the end if the baby went away or if she's part of it. I mean, she's kind of saying something along the lines of she doesn't care about anything anymore, but she's looking forward to having hope.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's the baby tongue. But is it a tongue? Is it a human?
Is it a tongue human?
I don't know.
Is it part tongue, part human?
It's quite absurd. So, like, at one point, the tongue and Candy and the poodles are all sitting there watching TV, and it's a show. I guess it's a guy dressed as a baby telling people how to make diapers for babies, and he's got a bonnet and he's drinking thing.
Yeah.
It's so ridiculous. But the tongue's trying to figure out how to fold a diaper, and he's like, "Oh, his bouncing baby behind's gonna be out there to all the world to see." So if it's just a tongue, he's not gonna have a butt.
No, I mean, I'm saying if it's part tongue, part baby. I don't know.
It's just
weird.
Very, very weird and strange.
This whole movie
absurd.
Is
absurd.
Yeah, it's a friend of mine said it was the definition of bizarre.
Yeah, I've seen it. I've seen it described as Priscilla, Queen of the Desert meets Pedro Almodovar meets Troma.
Right.
With, in my opinion, a little bit of Alex Cox. I don't know if you've seen some of Alex Cox's
movies. Like
Repo
Man, yes.
Right, right, right. A little bit of Repo Man, but also Straight to Hell.
I've heard of it.
Yeah, where he's out in the desert and there's all kinds of weird shenanigans going on there. There's a lot of that in there, too. It's just a very strange, absurd film. A lot of crazy shit happens.
Definitely.
But it's funny, too. And then, I know, I guess we could talk a little bit about the effects. Some of the effects are pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, considering, I mean, well, you said it had a $4 million budget, so
mm-hmm.
a lot of the effects were the tongue itself.
Right,
and
right.
How it stretched out a lot. And as I was pointing out to you, we got Robert Englund in the movie, and Nightmare on Elm Street movies became a very much special effects laden movies, especially in like part three to like all the rest of them, where it was a lot of like those kind of like effects where things were coming out, you know, people's mouths and stuff like that, tongues.
Maybe a little bit of Hellraiser, too.
Maybe a little Hellraiser. So it's kind of perfect for those two guys to be in it.
Right, right, right.
It's kind of gory at times. And
well, I can tell you one other little nugget of information is that this movie was co-produced by Christopher Figg, who produced Hellraiser.
Oh, well,
so and yeah, so he may have been the guy that brought in
Doug Bradley.
Yeah.
Doug Bradley was so good. I loved him as Wig. Ugh, he was I was so mad when he kind of just disappeared for a little bit, but he came back and I was like, yes.
And it's weird because they both had hair for a while, like for the first half of the movie. And we're both sitting there like, we just don't understand. You never see these guys with hair. And
I know.
Here they are with hair.
But Robert Englund took his hair off. I mean, it was definitely a toupee.
And he used it for the bird. He used it for the pigeon. It was so weird.
If you guys haven't seen the movie, and I don't know why you're watching this or listening to this if you haven't watched it.
You have to see it.
You got to see it. But there's like a scene with a pigeon. And the pigeon comes up, I guess it's at the windowsill.
At the prison.
And Robert Englund's character, the prison director or whatever, comes and sees the bird and, you know, picks it up. And I guess maybe the wing's broken or something because it's not really going anywhere. And he's playing with the pigeon. And the next, before they go to sleep, he takes off his hair, you know, his toupee, and he gives it to the bird so the bird can nest and sleep on him and, you know, and everything. And it was so weird. But
he kills a fly and tries to feed the dead fly from his finger to the bird. The bird's, like, not even paying attention.
That was the weirdest scene ever. It was almost like an outtake, I said before. Like, I was telling Paul, this is like an outtake, it felt like. Like, it wasn't meant to be in the, it wasn't like, you know, they're like, oh, what can we do with this scene? And
it's like a weird, strange homage to Shawshank Redemption there with the whole prison thing and the finding the bird. And it's just so strange. You know, I don't know. There's a lot of very interesting, strange scenes in this film that I don't really quite understand where they came from. But we were talking about effects. There's a lot of interesting effects, and then there's some kind of cheap, crappy ones too. Like the glowing rock in the desert did not look very, just didn't look real to me. It looked pretty shitty.
No,
you know,
what? I mean, I forgave that, you know, because they did what they could with it, you know, like that wasn't the main focus of the movie or anything.
Right.
So it didn't really bother me.
You know, that kind of stuff, and like, you know, you see the typical shot where the meteor is falling to Earth, and you know there's that all kind of look kind of blah. You know, I've seen that a million times, and different. I've seen some better, I've seen some worse.
I feel like it's sort of in a sci-fi kind of movie like this or whatever. It's kind of, you know, par for the course. You're gonna get it.
I'm not sure what to classify this movie is.
It's got part sci-fi.
It's got sci-fi in it. It's got horror in it. It's got comedy in it. It's got drama in it. It's got a little bit of everything.
A lot of drama.
It's got some drama in there. It's got some romance.
All drama. I mean, all movies have a little bit of drama. I mean, but I wouldn't classify it as a drama at all. Like in the thing. It does have a little bit of romance, especially between the tongue.
Interspecial romance. Very interesting.
was there anything else with the special effects? I'm trying to think.
I don't know. I mean, other than the tongue stuff, there's a lot of practical effects. I mean, when the tongue is angry and it starts beating up poor Candy and it actually picks her up and it hangs her and it slaps her around. I mean, there is a lot of stunt stuff. It's kind of a stunt heavy kind of a movie too. That was kind of interesting. They did a pretty good job with that. I you know, that looked pretty believable. And man, there were a lot of people getting blown up.
Yeah.
Anybody who went near the rock got blown up. Towards the end, everybody got blown up.
Mm-hmm.
So there were a lot of exploding heads and exploding people, which was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie.
Sorry.
I said it was kind of fun.
Oh yeah, it was kind of fun. Yeah, who doesn't love blowing people up?
Yep.
But yeah, I guess that's about it. It wasn't like a lot of lasers or, you know, spaceships or any of that kind of crazy shit.
When it's a sci-fi movie, it's not necessarily like that kind of sci-fi movie.
Right.
But it's, you know, it's fun. It's an alien invasion movie in a way. Like,
well, for poor Candy, it's certainly an invasion.
Yeah, it's an invasion of her privacy.
yeah, so I think a number of times we said how, you know, we talked a little bit about the writing. It's like, how do you write a movie like this? I mean, it's really weird. This is not a movie where scenes kind of go A to B to C.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things kind of jump around, and scenes seem to have their own strange internal logic that I guess makes sense to the characters, but we look at it like, what the hell? You know, especially like things like the poodles. I guess the poodles are still trying to figure out being human.
Uh-huh.
You know, they've got their loyalty to Candy, so they're trying to help her. So they're like, you know, they're grabbing strangers and tying them up to feed Candy.
The tongue, I guess.
Slash the tongue, right?
Because I guess it's never really fully said, but I guess that the poodles think that by feeding, because they said eat me or whatever, that that it would actually, you know, help the tongue,
right,
you know, and everything that would help Candy. But Candy, that whole time when they first were doing that, she didn't want to help this tongue.
No.
She wanted this tongue out of her.
Right. She sent them to go and find Johnny, which was a whole other can of worms, trust me. When they start dancing up on with the lights in the background and Robert Englund's like wants to shoot them. That was very strange. Yeah, it's I don't know. I it's hard for me to understand, I think, some of the scenes, and you're right, there's a lot of information that's not quite explained, really, but there's just so much going on and so much stuff happening that you got to wonder if it's just too much, you know? I'm wondering what the outtakes for this movie really were like.
Well, the DVD didn't have that?
No, I wish they did.
What did the DVD have?
It just had the movie, and then it plays chapters, and I think it has
a trailers or something.
Yeah, it's definitely got some of that, because this used to be, I mean, Apex, I don't know if you remember them, in the 90s, I think it was 80s and 90s. This is one of the movies that they released. And then they did stuff like Jack Frost and
which Jack
Frost?
The Ice
Cream Man, the crappy weird one, the one where the actual snowman is running around killing people.
Oh, okay, good. The better one, because there's the Michael Keaton.
Yeah,
I don't want people getting confused with that one. That one was like
that's
awful.
Boring. Yeah, no, yeah. No, these are the fun ones. They actually made two of those.
Yeah. Oh yeah, the one in Hawaii.
Right, Razor Blade is another one, and I don't know if you remember the Ice Cream Man.
That's seem to like ice, you know.
Stuff. I think that's the guy who was in. He was in Phantasm. He was in. Not Phantasm. He was in Toxie. I think he was in the Toxic Avenger movie. I forget the name of the actor. You'd recognize him immediately as soon as you saw him. But anyway, this is part of a group of movies that they did for a while. But they didn't actually put out the DVDs. I forget who put out the DVD.
Artistry.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I'd heard of Artistry. I think I picked up one or two movies from them before. I don't know if I've owned them, but I know I've rented.
Well, it would be a very interesting situation if these guys ever put this out in Blu-ray. I don't believe it's out in Blu-ray. I guess I could look and see. It would be an interesting... I'd love to see it on Blu-ray because, you know, I think you mentioned at some point you asked about what was this shot on, and I wasn't really sure. At parts, it looks like it's almost like videotape, you know, like a,
right,
like a camcorder.
And it looks like maybe Super 8 or...
something.
Or something, but also we got to mention the pan and scan.
Right,
it cuts off really bad.
That's
it cuts off.
Bad. It was a bad thing.
And so I even looked at you and I said, "Wow, this is shot really awful." And you said it's pan and scan. That's
right,
why.
Right. That's
so
the problem.
It's probably actually was shot a lot better. And then
so a Blu-ray restoration where they balance out some of the colors and some of the tones and they fix the pan and scan would probably go a long way to help this movie look really, really better, in my opinion. And probably if they did like a really good Dolby soundtrack, because that's the other thing is the music I thought was really good in this film, especially towards the end. There's this really kind of cool Spanish vibe going on to it. It's lot of fun. It's like a cantina kind of music.
Yep.
But it sort of adds to the sort of bouncy, fun theme of what's going on.
Like Luca Caracha.
Right.
It was fun. It was an enjoyable music throughout it or whatever. And I don't really remember like much of the score, though. That was the thing. I mean, it didn't, you know, I guess that didn't really impress
well,
me as
I,
much.
As I mean, recall, it's similar to a lot of the sort of typical horror movie kind of
score
of stuff, you know,
yeah,
sort of where it's there to kind of rack up tension. But the problem is, the way the movie is, I didn't really feel any too many moments of tension in there, because there was too much weirdness going on. It kind of, you know, undermines its own horror aspects.
Weirdness? No. Not with because this movie.
You're scratching your head like, what the hell did I just see?
I mean, with a movie called Killer Tongue, it's weird? No.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, it was weird. It was a strange movie.
It's funny that you mentioned, I think you mentioned that you were surprised that Troma did not put this movie out. This would have fit right in there, except it's probably better than a lot of the movies that they have put out.
Right. I mean, I guess that's why they didn't go with them.
For $4 million, that's probably a much bigger budget than a lot of the movies that Troma does.
Oh, yeah. And they wouldn't have been able to get any of the money back from investors and stuff.
Right.
I don't know if they did or not, you know. I don't even know if this got any kind of, like, release or if it went straight to DVD or anything.
I don't recall. I remember this had been around, like I said, 1996. I remember at least by 1998 I'd heard it and picked it up, and I had it in VHS. And, you know, VHS was pretty much going away at that point. So I had got it, I found it on DVD, and I've had it ever since. And I've enjoyed it, and I've shown it, you know, to friends and others. And it had been a while. It had been at least 2 to 3 years before I had seen this film. So, and as you know, I'm getting older, I tend to forget stuff. So there was a lot I had kind of forgotten. So it was kind of time for me to dig this puppy out. I do remember it being fun. I do remember being an odd ball wackadoodle independent film, and you know, we had just seen Gamebox 1.0, and I know you're expecting me to pull out something really horrible and terrible and stinky, so I kind of wanted to throw you a little bit of a curveball, you know, where you weren't quite expecting it to be as good as it was.
Yeah, I mean, because you were when you were first describing it to me or whatever, like right before the thing started, that there's going to be some names in there that I was not gonna expect in the movie and stuff, and so I was like, okay. And then I watched it, and I'm like, you know, Robert Englund, you know, well, I mean, he popped up on the credits, but Doug Bradley didn't, and I was like, holy crap, that's awesome.
Well, it's funny, I think if you go back and look at the credits, I think it has him listed as Doe Bradley. I think they spell his name wrong.
That's a mistake. Maybe it has to be spelled out.
It's a mistake. I know. But I tell you, if either of them show up, it scares the care. We have to ask him about this film.
I know he's Robert Englund's going to be a Texas Frightmare.
Yay.
So if I'm able to run into him and ask him a question, that might be one of the questions I'll have to ask.
This is a Robert Englund tour de force. It really is. I was so impressed by what he does with this film.
I think if I asked to interview him or whatever, but before I did that, I brought this up, that might actually make him want to be interviewed by me, because I actually watched stuff that probably most people don't bring this movie up to.
Exactly. They always want to talk about Nightmare on Elm Street. I doubt very many people ever ask him about this film.
Mm-hmm.
And his experiences, and it looked like he probably had a good time.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how it is behind the scenes or whatever, because sometimes
something like that would be fabulous for a Blu-ray. You know, if there was a commentary, or if there was like a featurette, a making of sort of thing, and you know, who knows? Maybe that stuff is out there. Maybe there's a Laserdisc. I mean, they were still doing Laserdiscs in the mid '90s, right?
Yeah, they were. I think Laserdisc went away in the late 90s-ish, so like right when DVDs kind of started taking over or whatever, I think Laserdisc kind of went away, so there might very well be a Laserdisc.
Plus, you know, again, this was done in Spain, so odds are Spain may have been a couple years behind what was going on in the United States and Japan, technologically speaking.
This won't be on Criterion, will it?
No, probably not, although it would be a very interesting choice.
I think Repo Man was on it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I mean, some strange movies do get on,
sure.
on there. But I guess they have to be like mainstream strange, I guess.
Right.
You know.
But it's funny because you didn't even recognize Robert Englund at first, did you?
No, I didn't. we talked about that because I said, whoa, wait. And you said, that's Robert Englund. And I said, oh my God, that because we saw a scene before where you first meet Robert Englund, and he's, I guess he had a, what was it?
He had fuck you tattooed onto his knuckles, and he's.
No, fuck me.
Fuck me.
Fuck me, sir, or something like that. At least, yeah, so he had to say, fuck me, sir. But Johnny says, fuck you. and
endearing himself immediately, of course.
You know, and then Robert Englund was like, "Read it again," and, right? You know, and it didn't sound or look like him. I didn't even recognize
well,
him.
Well, and it turns out he's got this toupee on, and
that was probably it.
Yeah, and then of course Doug Bradley has his toupee on. And it's just so weird how they had toupees on both of them,
mm-hmm.
because they're both famous for playing characters that don't have them, or at least you never see their hair. I don't recall ever looking at Freddy's head without a hat on. I mean, can you?
Mm-mm.
No. So, and then of course Pinhead is always bald with the pins.
Right.
So yeah, it was just an odd thing.
Well, maybe that's another reason why they wanted them to have the toupees and the wigs and stuff. And right. I mean, and Doug Bradley's character was named Wig.
Right. Hello.
You know.
Well, and this is all why I would love to see something in a Blu-ray where we get the director, Alberto Sciamma, and just ask him about some of this stuff, you know? Because like I said, this movie is not like any of the movies that I've seen that he's done. I mean, he's done a few others. I think he's done like maybe 7 or 8 films. And Black Plague and Blood Trap are the only ones that I remember. And they're nothing like that. These are a lot more traditional kinds of films. Nothing else is like this movie.
You know, I think somebody like Arrow or Severin or one of those
Kino Lorber, someone like that.
Yeah, could go and take this movie and put it out on a really good, you know, DVD, or Blu-ray.
Right. But yeah, I don't know that 4K is ever going to come to this particular movie, but Blu-ray would work, you know?
I mean, honestly, as much as I love 4K, I just don't think it's necessary for everything,
no.
And that's the problem that's happening right now, is that you know, I guess that's a discussion for a different day, but I think that 4K is kind of ruining, you know, the Blu-ray situation right now, because all of a sudden that's now the new thing is, you know, 4K, and then, you know, then it's going to be 8K, or wait, 12K or something like that. I don't know.
I don't know. But, you know, at least in this case, the step up from DVD to Blu-ray would be needed, simply from the pan and scan fixing that alone, mm-hmm. in my opinion. But I would love to have the director come on there and talk about just how he made some of his choices, where some of the plot points came from, why he had certain characters doing certain things, how he got his actors to do some of the things they did. I mean, they did a lot of crazy shit there. Like I said, there's a lot of stunts. It's very stunt heavy. And I think some of them kind of did some of the stunts themselves. Mappy Golan and Johnny both kind of go over the edge of a cliff, and she looks like she's physically climbing him in order to get back up on top. I don't know that was a body double. I think that was her. Yeah. And there's a lot of physical stuff going on there. So, you know, who knows? I don't know if they had it in their budget to have body doubles or professional stunt people. I'm sure they had some stunt people there. But
right.
I'd be very curious. And this is all stuff that the director's going to know. You know, maybe there's a director's cut out there. You know?
Yeah.
But
I would be interested in seeing if there was one.
Right.
If this was cut differently than what, you know, the director had originally envisioned.
But we certainly want to see a version where you're not looking at somebody's shoulder while they're talking, because the pan and scan cut off, you know, the sides of the film.
Yeah, you know, that was a big, you know, problem with this movie, I think, is like that the cuts are, or the shots are just not that well done because of the pan and
right.
scan.
And that's one of those things where if you didn't know any better, you might blame that on the director and say, well, they did a shitty job, or the cameraman, they did a shitty job of setting things up. That wasn't them. You're just seeing the movie that's been, you know, balderdized by not being shown properly in the proper format, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's the problem that you get with a lot of, especially a lot of the early DVDs, when it was just cheaper to just sort of pan and scan it and that's it. In fact, there's a big problem now. I remember reading about and seeing a video about the Buffy series on Blu-ray, about how that was all done pan and scan, and how that it absolutely looks terrible. and that the colors are crappy, the special effects look horrible, and that you have scenes that are cut off, like 40% of the scenes are gone. So you're missing half of the people talking because they just put it in there and ran it and just didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's a serious problem. And for a movie like this, which is not going to have a giant following, this is the only way some people are going to ever see this film. That's kind of a shame.
Right.
So I'd love to see this come out in Blu-ray.
I would too, honestly.
I don't know who owns the rights to this. So that's the thing. I mean, I guess the director could, or I don't know who. I don't remember who exactly put it out initially. I guess it was a Spanish company.
Awesome. I mean, I hope that they can come out and do that. But, I mean, who knows?
Right. And then, like I said, there are groups like Severin and Kino Lorber and others who are taking some foreign films, and, you know, Italian films and Spanish films and Korean films and Japanese films and re-releasing them in Blu-ray. So there is a chance that this could be done as well. So, we'd like to think that it's a possibility anyway. So what else did you have to say about this particular film, Killer Tongue?
I'm trying to think. I mean, like we said, I mean, that's said a bunch of times that this movie is fucking weird.
Oh, yeah. It's wackadoodle.
It's strange. I think we've even pointed it out at times of, like, who would come up with a thing like this? You know?
How do you write that?
I know. Like, there was just scenes where, I mean, whoever designed that bed?
The pig bed. Pig bed. It was so cute.
I know. I was telling Paul that he should get a cow bed.
Yes!
He really, really wants that. I think that would be great.
And, you know, I could have a pig bed for a guest. That would be
fun. Yes. See, that would be a great guest room bed. But wait, what would you be saying to the guests that they're pigs? I don't know.
No. Pigs are cute.
You can say that they're cute. I don't know.
But, I mean, you know, there's a whole other, you know, one of the, you know, problems with... but one of the unanswered questions to me is, you know, Rita, when she tries to escape, you know, I guess at one point, the tongue, I mean, it tries to go after her and the poodles stop it. They say, oh, your stupid tongue, leave her alone, because they liked her because she treated the poodles nicely and they remembered that. But she ends up getting handcuffed to the bed and she has to pretty much drag the bed with her out into the desert to try to escape. So she's dragging this damn bed through the desert the whole time, mm-hmm. in much the same way that poor Johnny is dragging the Jeep that he's been handcuffed to the whole time. And it's just an odd, you know, combination of things. And
so you can see why they got together.
Well, yeah, definitely. So yeah, I don't know if we mentioned that Johnny ends up two-timing Candy with the evil alien tongue inside her body. Because Rita, the formerly nun who didn't want to talk much, who got done up into like this hot babe by the poodles, was sort of there in the desert, and she helped him. She saved him when he got the pickaxe in the chest. She used the sparkly alien rock to cure his wounds. And so she finds him, or he finds her in the desert, attached to the bed, and he kind of says, oh, you know, I'm here for you, and then, you know, does what you generally do when you have a beautiful woman there in the bed next to you.
Well,
and,
I hope.
Yeah, and she has no problem with it. So then, unfortunately, that's when Candy finds them. And, all tongue hell breaks loose.
Yeah, the funniest thing is she was like, that's my bed. And then she, like, notices the bed first.
Right.
Which is really weird that she wouldn't notice Johnny first. But she noticed the bed first, so she went after, you know, went after the two timers and everything, and almost like sends them off a cliff.
Right, that was crazy. And by the way, we did mention that Candy does get pregnant from the tongue, because there is a scene where the tongue gets pretty darn personal with Candy. And actually, there's a couple of scenes that are kind of cringeworthy almost, where she's sort of rubbing the tongue up, you know, up and down. And at one point, they're like in bed sort of next to each other, like the traditional kind of after sex scene. And you're like, I expect the tongue to be smoking a cigarette.
I thought that would be funny, but it didn't do that. That's sad. It was like a missed opportunity right there.
I know. It was so funny. And the tongue is, I mean, it's so absurd. I loved it when he's, you know, pleading with her and he's, you know, saying, what does Johnny have that I don't have? And it's like, dude, a body, you know, arms and legs and a head.
It's a human, you know, right. Like compared to a tongue. like a alien tongue.
Right. It's just so bizarre and funny and absurd. So yeah, if you like movies that are just balls to the wall crazy, that are just absurdist theater, that because it's hard to really classify this as a horror. I mean, it is, but
it's not really a horror movie. It's not really at all. Like, it doesn't even have really like suspense or horror themes. Like, it's just a silly, goofy, fun
indie
sci-fi. I mean, it's definitely sci-fi.
Yeah.
But it's not the science fiction like the way that you normally see.
Right. And you're right. Just Jen was always talking about, why don't you guys do more science fiction movies? Well, this could have been one for her.
All right. Like, this would have been a perfect one. I think I think it was a missed opportunity.
I think this might have been a little too nutso for her, but you never know.
I don't know. I think she would like it, honestly. I think you should watch it with her someday. And so you get her guest.
I will happily suggest it to her. I know she's coming back again at some point.
Yeah.
I've been trying to either do the Evil Space Crickets from Hell movie or maybe a Nicolas Cage movie. We'll have to see. But this one might be one that we might just do independently and see what she has to say.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of fun, and I think people want a movie that's very, very different. Whatever genre you have.
It's all over the place, just like our podcast. Yeah.
This is the movie for you, trust me.
I noticed our podcast did go old. Like, we were talking about one thing, then we go about like we normally do.
Like we normally do. And we meander a bit.
You know, but that's what goes along with this movie, because this movie just goes all over the place.
It's
so strange. It doesn't have, like, a common, you know, thing with it, which is fun, and it's enjoyable. And as I was telling Paul, you know, after we watched it, I said it didn't take itself too seriously.
Which
seemed to be a common theme today, because we did a What the Fuck Friday that didn't take itself too seriously as well. And that's what we like, is movies that have fun.
This makes for a very polarizing film, because I've gone online and checked out comments and reviews, and a lot of people just don't like this movie at all. And other people love it. And then there's not a lot of sort of in between. People just seem to either love it or hate it. And even I, after seeing it maybe 5 or 6 times, I'm not really sure sometimes. I think now that I've seen it again, I think my latest thing is I love it. But, you know, it kind of changes. And I think it also really, really depends on the mood you're in. If you're not in the mood for something crazy and you don't have the patience, this is probably not the time to see the movie, this particular film, because you're not going to have a good time with it. It requires a bit of patience and a bit of concentration and a whole lot of suspending beliefs. You know, wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, definitely. Just so you know, you could get Ice Cream Man, Jack Frost 2, and Killer Tongue, the triple feature.
Sweet.
But it's like $35. But
it's a DVD, though.
Yeah, right? It's a DVD, not Blu-ray. I don't think they have it on Blu-ray.
Yeah, I would have been very surprised if that was on Blu-ray yet. I'd love it, you know?
Yeah, and you can get the audio CD. You can get the soundtrack to the film.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so there you go. If you guys want the soundtrack, it's only $20, you know, on used and new. So
yeah, I'll definitely make sure the link is on our review site, as I try to always do. We always try to make sure you have links to any of the places that sell these things, so that you can go get your hooves on your own copy of this. But what did you think about continuity? Were there many continuity errors? Was the monkey needed much for this?
Honestly, no. I don't think so.
I don't think so either. It's hard to tell.
Poor continuity monkey.
It's hard to tell because you're kind of sort of bowled over by all the strangeness that happens. But, you know, it's not like things disappear or there's not a lot of sloppiness to it. It might be weird, but it's not really sloppy. There's not a lot of mistakes, which is good. That's kind of the differentiation between this film and a lot of, micro-budget independent films where they just don't have the money, or they just don't have the time, or they just don't care, and they just let mistakes go. It's not like that. There's nothing like that here. You know, some of the sets weren't particularly convincing, you know, like the jail itself. I don't know.
Yeah, and
I didn't really buy it as a jail, but I didn't really care.
Oh, come on now, like the the nun.
The nun
gas station. Yeah,
the convent gas station. I thought that was adorable. Actually,
I mean, but then again, you don't believe it. You know, you don't buy it. You know, you're just like, this isn't real. You know what I mean? Like,
right, right.
But you know what? I mean, that's cool. You know. Like,
right.
That is what it is. But yeah, I think, honestly, the setting, the location, everything was perfect. I was hoping that since it was New Mexico, they would do, like, a Roswell kind of thing.
Well, that's just it. It was set in New Mexico, but it was shot in Spain.
Oh, I know. But I thought that's what they were going with.
Oh, I see. As far as the
alien. Since it was alien stuff, yeah. I thought they were going to do, like, an Area 51 kind of... vibe, and it didn't have, if it was like that or something supposed to be like that, like, because it was basically the desert, you know, or
right.
whatever, so you know, which is what Roswell is, so
right.
It would have been perfect for them to kind of, even if it was set in Spain, to like be kind of like, oh, we're over next to Roswell and this is, you know, like aliens are coming, you know, and everything like that. But then they'd have to bring in the military and other people,
right?
Government.
Right. Well, I mean, if Alberto Sciama wanted to, that, you know, the story leaves off with that big giant glowing rock still out there. There could be a killer tongue too, or you could do a killer pancreas or a killer elbow or a killer, you know, bridge of the nose or whatever. You know, you could do all sorts of things because God knows, you know, that's the kind of the fun thing you can do with, you know, aliens from outer space. Since they're alien, they could be pretty much whatever you want, you know?
Right.
So if you want to have them invading humans and becoming part of your eyeball, you could do that. There is a Killer Eye movie already.
Yeah, right? There's already a Killer Eye and just as bad as this movie, but like probably worse than this movie because...
that was a fun movie too.
Yeah. You know, it's fun. David Dakota makes fun movies.
There you go.
But yeah,
that's Full Moon though.
Yeah, that's Full Moon, and we've done enough Full Moon this year. So
mm-hmm.
let's try other stuff. You know?
Yeah. Well, it's difficult because they make so many of them.
I know. So like we're gonna have to have seasons on seasons because
oh,
each
darn.
Season we'll have to have more
Moon
movies.
Well, trust me, I've got so many films that we could easily do 20 seasons of this.
Yeah,
so, at
like
least
100 seasons.
Oh,
probably.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so let's go on with our rating, I guess.
Okay, so just about the time where we talk about the stinkometer. This is, for those of you who've been listening to us previously, and for the benefit of those of you who have not, we will rate the movie from 1 to 10 on our stinkometer, with 10 being extremely stinky and being terrible, all the way down to a 1, which is really not very stinky at all. Kind of, you know, okay, not a bad film. You almost got to wonder what it's on for any film cafe, but we don't always pick, you know, crapathons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, actually, the one that you picked last time, Gamebox 1.0, and probably this one, I think, were actually pretty good films.
Yeah, I mean, why don't you do yours first?
All right, so for me, you know, I vacillate back and forth. I think I'm going to end up giving this one a 4.5.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
It's actually not that bad.
It's pretty good. It does have a definite stink quality just because of the writing aspect of it. This is not an A plus B equals C movie. This is like an A plus seahorse equals cabbage.
Right.
You know, it's just sort of out there and strange. And
uh-huh.
I like that, but, you know, I can see a lot of regular people who go to mainstream movies are not going to like this film.
Right.
Know? So 4.5, it's got a decent stink to it, but I've seen much, 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 much worse.
Uh-huh. I was going to go with a 6, actually.
Okay.
And I agree, you know, with a lot of what you said, but my thing with it is... it's still so weird and fucking strange.
It is.
I cannot lower it to pass like under 5, you know? And I didn't want to give it a 5 because I don't really like giving 5s out. And now that I'm thinking about it, because 5s almost feel like it's the, you know, like I always want to be either, I always want to watch something that's either under it or above it, you know?
Okay.
Or whatever. You know what I mean? A 5 is average.
Yeah,
you know,
see, you don't like mediocrity.
Well, now when it comes to these things, we're watching movies that aren't supposed to be like average. They're supposed to be, either really, pretty good or very bad, you know, or whatever. And so when they're in between, it's kind of gets whatever. So I want to say it's above average or something below average, I guess. Well, because it goes up is below.
Because of the weirdness factor.
Because the weirdness factor is strange. It's like it's a crazy, campy.
I can see that, but for me, I guess because, I look at the acting performances, and even those, a lot of them are over the top, they're still kind of fun. Like the guy who plays Chip, and I could not remember his name. He was just balls to the wall crazy.
I loved him.
Freaking hysterical.
Him and Frank. Yes, they were. I wish they had more scenes together, honestly, because they split for a little bit.
And his peeing. His little buddy. What was his buddy called?
His wiener was called something.
I forget what he was calling it.
It's gonna come to me.
Oh God, I hope not.
Shouldn't have said that. God damn it. What did he call his...
I forget. Randy, maybe? I don't remember.
No, it was... He had a name for his penis.
Yeah, it was
very
strange.
And it was... Yeah, it was like, what the fuck? So, because he was trying to get it to pee. And then he peed on the...
He peed on other people, and he peed on the rock.
He peed on the rock. The rock was the big thing.
And Chip had that one saying, too, before he ended up getting killed by the tongue. I forget what it was. He actually had a couple of things, but he was just like over the top. He was really, really funny.
Yeah, come on. Don't beg. I'll tell you what we'll do. You go in the kitchen and make me something good and juicy, and I'll have a nice hot bubble bath. And then you can suck me dry and call me Dusty.
For the most part, everybody else's performances were pretty darn good. Technically, I didn't really have any issues other than, like I said, some of the film looked like it was kind of like video. There was a lot of good special effects. And if you can get past the weirdness, I think a lot of people will like the film. But that's just it. The weirdness is going to turn off a lot of people.
Weirdness will, and I think that's why you said, like a lot of people didn't like it.
Right.
And then there was a lot of people who did like it. Right. Who are like us, who watch these kind of things and say, oh, my goodness, this is funny. So,
And what did your friend say about the film?
Oh, yeah, it was, it was the definition of bizarre.
Yeah.
true definition of bizarre. And I agree. I totally agree that it is a bizarre, absurd. He didn't know I was, he thought I was just starting to watch it or whatever. Mm. So he was like, it gets weirder. And I was like, oh, I know. I'm almost done with it. at that time. And it got even weirder and weirder all the way up to the end,
Yeah, very true.
And so if you don't want to watch a weird movie,
right,
don't watch this movie.
And, I'm the kind of person that I really enjoy the absurdities of life. And so something like this, it just really, it sort of scratches that itch for me. So
yeah,
I like absurdities. I like crazy, weird shit. As long as there's, something good behind it. I mean, there's a lot of crazy, weird shit out there that I don't like either. I don't like it just because it's weird. This just sort of added an extra layer of icing onto the cake as a whole, so to speak.
But so. I really enjoyed it. I mean,
that's good.
It's not a movie I'd probably watch a lot, it's something I watch every now and then, maybe. Mm. But only if I'm with people. I don't think I ever watched this movie by myself.
Yeah.
Maybe you could, but...
I have, and it's not nearly as much fun as when I've got somebody else.
Yeah, because you can kind of see the person kind of going, shaking their head and wondering what the fuck's going on. And,
right.
And everything. So, yeah, no, it's something I think people would get a kick out of this movie. Well, that pretty much wraps up the discussion about it.
Right.
So I guess we're going to go into check out indiefilmcafe.reviews.
Yay.
We're going to have one more episode coming out. It's going to come out after I get back from Texas Frightmare.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But it will be done before Texas Frightmare. And I'm not sure what it is yet. I mean, we even if we know what it is, we never tell anybody until, like,
and
we...
I forget. Did you say Robert Englund's going to be down there?
Yeah, he should be down in Texas primary. So if I can, I will. I'll have to be reminded because I'll probably forget. I'm probably also going to tag him on Twitter on this. So if he's listening and everything and he enjoyed this podcast, let us know what you think, Robert. Because, you know.
Maybe I should give you my DVD and have him autograph it. I'll give you some money and he could.
Okay.
See what he did. I don't know. I don't know if he would do such a
thing. Oh, he would. He would. He does. It's just he's a little expensive.
Oh, I see.
Just gotcha. A little bit. But we'll see. You know, which isn't bad because he deserves it. He is a awesome, you know, awesome actor who's been working his butt off. I met him once and he scared the shit out of me, you know, and I loved it.
Well, yeah. And the thing is, if you have only ever seen him in Nightmare and Elm Street movies, you really need to see him in this. This is kind of almost like a revelation, in my opinion. He's just so, so good. And it's such a big part for him. You know what I mean?
He does something different, you know, which is good. It shows off his range as an actor. Mm-hmm. So if you want to see something that's not your typical stuff from Robert Englund, this is the movie for you.
Absolutely.
I think you'll really get a kick out of this. Also, let's see, what else is going on? I'm trying to think of things. We've got Horror, Blood, and Coffee, but that's not going to be coming back out until Texas Frightmare. So we're not, because Easter's coming up, and that's next week, which will be the day after this is, or day before this is released. So.
And I'm going to be very busy sitting on my tush and eating chocolate bunnies.
So there you go. And then, let's see, what else we got? We got Criterion Watch on YouTube. Mm-hmm. We've got Blu-ray Hunter on YouTube, or I got Blu-ray Bunder, but he does stuff with it too sometimes. And then we're doing a lot of stuff.
There's a lot of Sick Flick production stuff going on.
Yeah, and there's a lot that we're releasing Lucas and Olivia, hopefully at Texas Frightmare. There's a lot going on at Texas Frightmare. I didn't realize that, but there's a lot like happening around that time period and stuff. So
yeah, definitely come check out the website. Go to Sick Flick Productions, and hopefully we will keep you as updated as possible and let you know about what's going on.
Yes, check out sickflickproductions.com, indiefilmcafe.reviews. Let's see.
And we have a couple of special interesting guests coming up for some of our upcoming podcasts.
Oh yeah, next month. Yeah, we've got a really awesome guest that we can't wait to unveil, and an awesome movie that we can't wait to watch with this guest. But yeah, that's about it, I guess, right now. Also, Horror, Blood, and Coffee.com, and check out SupernaturalAssassins.com, just got launched on Friday, so a couple Fridays ago. So there you go. Thank you guys so much for checking this out. We keep forgetting Patreon.
Come visit our Patreon.
Come give us a dollar.
Yes, give us money. Money, money, money.
You know, Continuity Monkey needs some new clothes.
That's right. He's got to get fed.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for checking this out. Hope you guys enjoyed it. And, till next time. Bye.
Bye. See ya.